Welcome to our podcast, where we interview Circassians living in the diaspora. We are here to bridge the past to the present. I'm Yasmin Bach.
And I'm Laura Qardan. In this episode, Qadar Natho narrates the story of how the first Circassians came to the United States in 1923, leading up to building the current New Jersey Cultural Center. Amo Qadar was a distinguished author, Circassian activist, and one of the founders of the Circassian Benevolent Association. This episode was recorded in his Manhattan apartment just 8 days before his passing. Those that knew him or even had the opportunity to meet him can say that he was passionate about the preservation of the Circassian language and culture. We would like to thank Amo Qadar for his tireless efforts of encouraging all generations to learn their language, understand their history, and teach the younger generations to carry on what they've learned.
My dear Circassians, best greetings from the United States to you. My name is Qadar Natho. I was born in 1927 in Hatramtuk, the dearest place in the Caucasus. I left my country during World War II in 1943. I lived in Europe until 1958. In 1958, I came to Jordan, where I realized that our young people are forgetting our language and traditions. I came to the United States from Jordan in 1956. Since I came to the United States, I made it my duty to let our young people and the world know who are Circassians, what are their traditions, culture, and their aspirations for the future. So please help us. Circassians who came to the United States were originally from the Caucasus. They left Russia during the revolution or after revolution, and they lived for a while in Turkey. In Turkey, when they arrived, the conditions were very hard. But one lady of them, by the name Fatima, they called them in Turkey Fatima Hanum, from the Şerefsukba family, and married to Natürbelz, she organized a Circassian committee, ladies' committee, and somehow managed to get acquainted with the Sultan's family. And because they didn't have shelter, she requested from them a shelter. So the Sultan gave them a house, empty house, one of his mansions, I think, and the Circassians settled in it. At that time, there were Turkey was under the occupation of the Allied forces, First World War. They started taking the crates from, they discarded and made furniture for their house. The Circassians made furniture and started making parties. And that way they became acquainted with the leaders of the Allied forces. The leader, or the commander, the high commander of them, liked Circassians very much. This was a group of, aristocratic families, which were officers and princes before that. So they had never worked physically, but this American was impressed very much by their tradition, manners, and so forth. So he recommended the State Department to the State Department that they should bring them here. But he didn't let them know until the State Department approved his request and decided to bring them here. Once that happened, he went to Fatma Hanım and informed the news. And she collected, gathered Circassians in Turkey and told them about the good news. They discussed it for a while. Most of them didn't like the idea to come to the United States because they believed that something would happen to the Bolsheviks that took over Russia and they could go home, back home. So that group refused to come to the United States. But about, I don't remember, a group came with Fatma Hanım to the United States. And the first, I think the Russian group with Tolstoy Foundation invited them to Connecticut, I think. A lock company, a lock company, which promised there to give all the Circassian men work. But after a while, the Circassian didn't like it. They moved there, they didn't like it, and they came back to New York City. New York City, high class of New York City, welcomed them very much. Again, they were impressed by this group and started inviting them to give the treating them. But the Circassians couldn't reciprocate the reception. So they had help, they all were offered help, but the Circassians were too, proud not to be able to reciprocate, to receive, accept the help. And they started working very hard, sometimes working for 16 hours, and all kinds of jobs and trying gradually to. So that way they became with the high class in New York City of American high class. And they became very friendly. This people, local people, were very much impressed. Gradually, the Circassians and Georgians got together, and they made a La Verdi called an organization, and they purchased property in Poughkeepsie. And they started to associate there. They began to associate there in summer vacations, during summer vacations. And then gradually, they began to give high-class evening parties, dancing parties, and that way they became more acquainted with the American people. And most of them worked at that time as doormen or taxi drivers and so forth. But then gradually, Fatma Hanum, when she came into Turkey, she had taken courses in dressmaking, sewing. So she started gradually making here dresses for people, and then she succeeded to make for this movies and different things, costumes and dresses. But as soon after maybe 3-4 years, her husband died. And she had to bring several kids. Therefore, she started working very hard, but never accepted the help offered from the American friends. She started working and paying for the kids and educated them. And then there was a Khan from Giray's former. His name was Kadir. He organized, he opened the riding equestrian, riding Circassian style course, horsemanship. Again, he started teaching high class people. He bought in Katona, upstate New York, about 35 or so acres of land in the mountain, to keep horses. And he opened this equestrian school called Saddle and Boots, or Boots and Saddle, I think Saddle and Boots. It became so famous, so successful. Afterwards, he started hiring big holes and making, horse shows, horseman shows inside the holes, inviting people. But gradually the father died after the war began, and his son, anyway, the sons of this had very good education in the United States. One of them, the oldest one of them, I think, Chinggis Giray, He came to this country when he was 1 year old. He was born in 1923 or 22. One year later, they came to the United States. I forgot then the name of the ship they came on, but they were first taken to Ellis Island. They had to go through immigration process and then settle in the United States. But that's Chinggis. Chinggis became a captain in the United States Army after World War II. When the war ended, he was in Europe in the army. He became the main spokesman for the military, United States military, and he is the one who negotiated all of this between the two countries, the problem, the thing. And he met with high officials, all of them. After the war, he insisted that the United States should fight the communist Russia and the Jews and anyway, United States didn't agree with him. So he got angry, quit the school and settled in Katona. He spent his life in exclusion. The only one, I met him after his mother died. And he had a younger brother who had married the daughter of Sikorsky, a Russian Jew, who was who made in the United States the first helicopter. He married Sikorsky's daughter and had one son, and they called him Kadir also, after his grandfather. After that, he divorced her and married a Scottish girl, moved to Scotland and Ireland, and of course, this country they didn't call princes, but when he moved there, they started to call him Prince Azamat Girey, and he opened there race horses, and he lived there. And again, he had a son, the son from this Sikorsky. By that time, I had printing shop in New York. I used to print books and magazines. Specializing on Slavic languages and publishing books and magazines for Ukrainians, Russians, and different Slavic people. So at that time, I I saw a magazine, The Son of Azamat Giri. He became a champion on skateboard. And they called him the man without bones, boneless man. So I wrote an article in my magazine. At that time, I had started publishing a magazine called Circassian Star, bilingual. So English and Adiga. So I wrote an article about this young man. I said, Circassians have a vein in their body that they, no matter where they go, they have to succeed, to excel, not succeed, to excel. So I said, this young man was, her father was Adiga. He never saw Adigas, he never lived with Adigas, but it was in him, inborn. And he became champion and so forth. I wrote an article. At that time, Chinggis used to read my magazine. And after I published them, they used to make comments, criticism. And he kept sending me books about distinguished Americans. He wanted me to become very famous. But after I published this in my magazine, this story, he wrote to me a very angry letter. He said, up to now, I believed every word you wrote. But from now on, I'll read, he said, every phrase you write with a big question mark. Because you said, a Jew is an Adiga. His younger brother's son.
This group of Circassians found it very difficult to sustain life in Connecticut, which is why they moved back to New York. After failing to find work, they decided to move across the Hudson, settling specifically in Paterson, New Jersey. Here, the Circassians were able to find a wide variety of factory positions with increased pay, not to mention how much cheaper the cost of living was compared to the big city. During this time, one of the first philanthropic associations, the North Caucasus Incorporation, was also relocated in New Jersey. Let's continue listening to find out what happened after our people started settling in a new state.
And the members of it became more Circassian. And they, first of all, they started to meet newcomers, sometimes with the workers of Tolstoy Foundation, invite the people, but Circassian used to invite them and give them a room and live with them until the newcomers found work and could settle by themselves, take an apartment and live. They used to be the guests of their friends. And that way, gradually when the more Circassians came, they renamed the North Caucasian Association into the Circassian Benevolent Association. And from that time on, they began to help the newcomers, whether they came from Europe, DPs, or from diaspora. The Circassians used to come and help them. And that way, they settled in New Jersey. But the more people set out on their kin, they began to split up. What happened first? The Circassian Association had welcomed many people from Syria. At that time, the Circassian Association was mostly from the Caucasus. But after the majority of Adivas became in the United States from Syria, I don't remember exactly whose idea it was. They decided to, I think it's first the Kabardians. The Kabardians separated from the Adiga group and made a Kabardian association and bought their own house. And then when the more people arrived, Syrians, people from Syria that joined our association, wanted to organize another, their own association. Gradually, this increased. Then the Circassians from Jordan organized, and then Albert Karani, his political association. These people did not only have a separate association, but they began to work against each other, compete, and even fight. This continued for a while. Now, maybe we had developed first, Kabardian Association after Circassian Rebel Association, and then the Syrian Association, they made Dr. Jawad Idris their president, and then Kazan's Association, also Adiga group. And then Albert Karali's association, and so on, the Jordanian association. But after a while, took years, we started negotiating Circassian Rebel Association to negotiate with the members of other organizations that we should join and work together. And first, I think, again, a Kabardian group from the Kabardian Association, like Bashkor and Malamusa family and others joined our association. But when they joined association, they became the majority. Again, we became, before we realized, this majority took over by votes, legally. What they did, all the members of men and women became members, and next voting they won the thing and took over the association. When that happened, although Robert started the idea that we should build the place, especially mosque, people started refusing to help because in our association, most members became of Bamkos, I think mullahs. So this went on until practically we began and finished building the first our mosque and association. And then gradually our association became again the main association. All others gradually they joined. And that's how the Circassian Association became one and most, now probably the only association in the United States as such. You know, I'll add to it. When we first made International Circassian meeting in Nanchuk, I think 1999, I'm not sure. We made the association there, International Circassian Association, and the first bylaws, laws they took purpose for the association, they declared to be that all Circassians in the world should World Circassian Association. All Circassians should learn their own language. And if in any country there are several Circassian associations, they should join together, merge, in order easier to help the International Circassian Association. And then they even said that in Russia, they, for example, they added in their last names Orvi. They said Malamusa, Malamuso, Kardan, Kardanov, and so on, to change that and to become Adigar names. And then the most important thing they did, the associations from all over the world, Circassian Association, they defined how many representatives they should to the Circassian Association in the meetings, to participate in the meeting. And this Circassian Association created Circassian, International Circassian Congress, which would lay out the program and the works for the following year or following years. And the Circassian Association, Circassian Association would remain like the executive board, executive administration of the International Circassian Congress, which had to make the decisions or the program, lay out the program, where these members of different associations. And then they had also introduced revolving places of international associations meeting. For example, from Kabardai the first year, then Adygey the second, then Cherkessk, and then outside the world itself. These were very good beginnings. But gradually Russia started insisting that in order to give them international status to this association, they wanted to prove, our association had to prove that it has other members from the outside world or the member organizations in this organization. And the first thing they wrote to me and said, please send us your bylaws and structure, because this is the demand. But before I could give them, because at that time it was very expensive, the cost of the translation, and we were very poor in our organization. If we made the fundraising parties, we were happy to earn $200, $300. So gradually, the International Circassian Association failed to become as effective as we first thought. But it was very good organization. Circassian Association, I think it was called North Caucasian Association. It was organized in New York City, not in New Jersey. And different people, in other words, by different ethnic groups from the Caucasus. But what happened after this has to do with second wave of the Circassian, which were called DP. When they started to come to the United States, of course, the Fatmah Hanum brought them here, because Tulsa Foundation didn't want to help to bring Circassians here, because they said that because Circassians are Muslims, they're going to have two wives. It was against the United States. So Fatma Hanum went to the State Department and found a way to invite the first group. She brought them from Germany. People she brought to us from the Caucasus, refugees in Germany. And they first also settled in New York. But gradually they realized that it's harder to find a new jobs. We started the mosque was Obed's idea. First, Obed made the construction committee. I think Abdin was one of the active members, and the price had proved to be very expensive. We didn't have money. Our association sold the property in Mawa. Helgen. No, we sold the property there, I said, for about $60,000 or so, I don't remember. But first of all, we had to hire engineers to make the construction. And then we had to hire lawyers and so forth. We didn't have enough money. So the first thing, Obed Malamusa and a young man from Jordan, they went to Saudi Arabia and brought some money. And then we created a fundraising committee and started going Saturday, Sundays from home to home at a dig association and collecting money. But our association had only about 70, 80 members. And then we made several trips. First, Obed, I, and Husni to Saudi Arabia to raise funds. And then after that, Obed and I went to Emirates, Arabian Gulf States, to raise funds. And third time I went myself to this Emirates and we raised money. And the most important thing that happened to us, we found that Jabal Kubati and Asitin, we call them Khushha sometimes, that he was the advisor of the biggest, richest person in Saudi Arabia called Kamal Salah, Sheikh Kamal Salah. And we started receiving from him help, financial, but through ICRA Foundation. 30,000 dollars a year. This continued, I believe, from about 1984-6 until I finished my presidency in the Casa in 1098. After that, Khardan, Muhammad Khardan became president, and Khaldun became vice president. And Kubati complained to me while we were receiving this aid from the foundation. We had to write every year a report to these foundations that we received the money, we thanked them, but that we spent it on such and such a project. But we have another project to do, or to post so much, and so on. We still have to give them report every year. And this new administration failed to write them the report. So I called them, I tell them, I said, we have in our records the last time I wrote them, presented them the report. So I said, you can just change a few words in it and sent it to them. But gradually they reduced that amount. I think we did to $9,000 or something. And then after a few days they cut it off. But to that help, we raised also money also and paid.
The founders of the Circassian Benevolent Association and its members worked tirelessly to ensure that the construction of the building continued to move forward. Funds were attained through donations that came from overseas, as mentioned by Al-Muqaddad, and from the members of the association. Some of the members provided the CBA with personal loans, and some even put their homes up for collateral. Most people take the CBA for granted. No one realizes all the hard work and effort it took to bring a community together. The founders had great hopes and dreams for the future Circassian generations to grow this community. Amo Khazad had his own hopes and dreams for the future generations.
My message to the younger generation is that, as I said before, every one of us has a sacred duty, which is to help our younger generation, to pass them over to them, our heritage, without which a nation cannot live, exist. And that is to preserve our traditions, our language, our proud past. And because without our language, especially the language, we are doomed to die as a nation. Therefore, I hope and beg our young people to realize that they have the duty, sacred duty, to help the younger generation to preserve our traditions, language, and the proud heritage we received from our fathers and great fathers, grandfathers. That's my main aim. We should help each other, we should love each other, and work together like one person, and give, you can say, most of our lives, or all our lives, dedicate to that purpose, to saving our heritage, our culture, by helping, teaching our younger generation. So please, each of you, try to understand my request and start working very hard. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and join us next time for more stories. Do you or someone you know have a story you'd like to share? If so, email us at contact@dearcirques.com.